whenever religious fundamentalists speak in tongues, or pass out because they're overcome with the Holy Spirit, we wonder, are they for real?
Is it just peer pressure from other religious folks that makes them get so into it, or is Jesus really one hell of a drug?
Our guest today is musician Kira Lee, whose new album, Transfigure, captures her life growing up in an evangelical Christian family in the Deep South. As a youth, Kira went through gay reparative therapy. Amazingly, she survived all that and is now a fierce trans woman.
Listen as Kira walks us through her amazing musical journey. Plus,
do drag queens, hot leather daddies, and fierce dykes on bike at the gay pride parades make us all look way more interesting than we really are?
And are football players at the Super Bowl size queens?
You better believe it. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Hey!
For 14 years now, Feast of Fun has brought you great conversations with some of the world's most interesting artists, because people like you took time out of their day to support this one-of-a-kind show and share our future together. Visit feastoffun.com/plus and become a member, or make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Thank you.
You can't spell Kira without K-Y, am I right?
I wouldn't know, but and there, I should be their spokesperson. Just be like
Kira with a K-Y, baby.
Totally.
Our guest today is musician Kira Lee, whose new
Kira.
I'm sorry, did I just fuck
you
that
just
up again?
You just did it, you motherfucker.
Sorry,
Kira Lee. Nobody does it like.
Yeah, Kira Lee. Our guest today is musician Kira Lee, whose new album, Transfigure, captures her life growing up in an evangelical Christian family in the Deep South. As a youth, Kira went through gay reparative therapy and is now a fierce trans musician.
Yes.
Yes, honey.
Yes, queen.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Now, before we taped the show, we asked you for your permission to bring up your last appearance where you were known by the name Kyle Greer.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Oh, it was such a fun show because we did Attack of the 50-Foot Rainbow Flag. Because, you know, we hear so many times, like, people being like, oh, these drag queens, these leather men, these dykes on bikes, they make us all look bad. But we flipped the script and we're like, do they make us look too fabulous?
I know. I think they're intimidated. Yeah. Oh, that's right, because it was, like, Paul Ryan and somebody else, and we were, like, trying to make them secret gay lovers or something. No, that was pretty great.
Now, yeah, how do we feel about that all these years later, because that was about like half a decade ago.
Well, last time you came on, it was June of 2012.
Yeah,
so that's 5 years.
God.
So I guess almost half a decade.
Louise.
I feel like it's never going to end, this debate over our public appearance in our spaces, mm-hmm. and this really boils down to people who embrace sexuality.
Agreed.
You know, sluts.
And, yes, girl. And I think, I don't know, and I kind of at this point, I'm just so tired of the hypocrisy, because I'm like, look, if fucking neo-Nazis, sorry, I'm going to cuss, neo-Nazis and KKK are going to do all this crap, then, and you're going to be okay with that, then, and the alt-right, then you need to let whoever...
We need the flip side of that.
Yes, and let people just be who they are, and if you're going to get shell-shocked at that, then you need to go back to Jesus and do some praying.
Well, I've seen people do not complain about drag queens like they used to.
No, and I think...
Drag race. Because now it's on television, so people are like, if it's on TV, it's all right, and it can be no wrong.
For
just like
sure.
Our president.
Yeah, right. No, I do think that, like, Drag Race and, like, especially the VH1, I mean, I definitely think it has, like, opened the door, and especially now that it has such a young audience. Mm-hmm. I think it's... Because I think those generations of people who were, like, so shocked at all that, I think they're, like, dying off, you mm-hmm. know? And so I think the people... I think anybody under, like... 40, I'll say, probably doesn't really care. And I think, especially young people, they're like, why are you guys screaming?
And nowadays, I think there was a study I just saw the other day. I wish I had it in front of me. But, like, more and more young kids are, like, not opting to identify as male or female. They're just like, I'm non-binary. Your gender constructs don't
fit us
at all.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, I, you know, I work with kids a lot, you know, at School of Rock, and I do a lot of theater. And there's a lot of queer kids. And one of the, I have a trans kid named Zeb, who is like a huge reason why I finally came out as trans, because I was like, if this kid who is 15, 16, if he can do it, then like, what's my excuse? Do you know what I mean? And so it's like,
you're
I don't know.
You these little brats, I can do this too.
Yeah, listen, I'm the one who's supposed to be doing stuff around here.
Wait, did Zeb inspire you?
He did. Yeah.
Wow.
I have to say, like, it was partially after like Trump got elected. I was just like, I've had it. I can't. I don't want to, like, people please, and I don't want to, like, I don't care what these horrible right-wing people think of me. I'm tired of that. You know, I'm tired of trying to, like, do that. And then, secondly, seeing, like, somebody like Zeb and these queer kids that I'm teaching who are just, like, yeah, this is me, and I don't care, it made me be like, you know what, I should do that, because, like, if they can do it, then I should be. And I'm the one who's supposed to be, like, you know, the shining example, so.
Kira Lee, you grew up in Louisiana.
In Louisiana, yes.
Home of Chi-Chi Devane.
Yeah, Chi-Chi Devane, y'all. Shreveport, you were from the same hometown, so.
What is Shreveport, Louisiana like? Like, where is it located?
So, it's in the northwestern, what we call the Arklatex, which is southern Arkansas. It's like the tri-state area. Okay. So, it's like southern Arkansas. It's East Texas and Northwest Louisiana. So the thing about Louisiana is, like, it's kind of two different cultures. If you kind of go in the lower half, it's more of the Mardi Gras Cajun-y kind of a thing that you think of Louisiana. But the top half is more like sort of Dallas, East Texas. So it's a little bit more like country, like Protestant, real Bible Belt heavy.
And do you have gators up there or not?
We do. Yeah, okay. We still have gators. We still got all the Cajun food and stuff, but it's like Steel Magnolias, like that was set in Nacogdoches, which is not that far from where I grew up. So it is that kind of like very pageanty kind of culture. It's weird because we still have that very riverboat kind of thing because there's casinos everywhere, but it's really like it's either Pentecostal or like Baptist churches.
And were you a Pentecostal or a Baptist?
So I started out a little bit of both. So we started out as Southern Baptist, and then I was about seven. My parents, they wanted to change churches, and so we found this church called Word of Faith Baptist, and they didn't know that they were like holy rolling evangelicals. So they went in and they were like, what is this? And somehow the preacher convinced them that it was like the right way to be. So we converted to evangelical.
Did you have to go through like another baptism and stuff like that? Or was it just,
kind of, yeah. So I got baptized at that church, and then what they call baptized in the Holy Spirit, which were like lay hands on you and you're supposed to speak in tongues, and now you can like perform miracles and prophesy, and you know,
you were able to speak in tongues?
Allegedly, yeah. Like,
did you actually do it?
You sounded more like Joanne Worley than anything.
I just kind of was like, me and my brother, we were just like, you know, we just started like making up nonsense syllables, and everybody was hooping and hollering, and like, you're a kid. And so, like, you are, like, you like the attention. And so, and
I think it's theatrical.
It is. And, you know, yeah. I love a theater. So, and it was entertaining. And, like, and it's also that kind of mass hysteria thing where everyone around you is into it. And so you sort of, like, pick up on that vibe. And, you know, I'm, like, creative. And so it was, like, fun.
Were you the person that spoke in tongues, or were you the person that would translate what they would say?
So here's how that works.
Yeah.
So there's the way that tongues are supposed to work is that like you can have, oh, I know that's not a terrible yell, tongues of fire. So you're supposed to have like this private prayer language that you can use. And then like in a worship service, people can start speaking or praying or singing in tongues. But then there's like the gift of tongues where like somebody like hops up and it's like, you know, and then someone else has to get up and interpret. Mm-hmm. And if someone does not interpret, honey,
That's the devil, right?
That is, yes. And I have it where our preacher, when nobody would like come up and they'd be like, rebuke you. They're like, you do not speak in tongues unless like you know it's from Jesus and that you someone's going to come up.
So hold on a second. If your friend didn't translate what the nonsense you were saying, you were fucked.
You were fucked. I mean, and they'd be like, y'all can't get caught up in the moment. So I'm like, come on. Like, I would, if that were me, I'd be like, okay, so this is what's going to happen. You know?
You would coordinate.
Yeah, I'd be like, nobody's got my back. Somebody jump up and be like, thus saith the Lord, let's order pizza today. I mean,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, that would be like that. Like, your parents are like, oh, we're going to Dairy Queen after the service.
Yeah, seriously. So, and then, you know,
Jesus wants us to go to Dairy
Queen.
Yeah.
And then we would always have, like, an altar call, so people would come up.
Did anybody, I mean, these were kids, so did anybody, like, try to manipulate their parents into doing, buying a new bicycle or something
like
that?
Oh, my God, no. Somebody should have told us. I think we were just too scared, you know?
You were very sincere about it.
Yeah. And, like, you know, you'd go up to the altar call and people would lay hands on you. And so people around you would just speak in tongues and they would be like, you know, the Lord Jesus is saying this and blah, blah. And they would do the thing where they would, like, go boom. And then you would just, like, fall back. And, like, and so you would, they call it getting slain in the spirit. And so, of course, you would do it because it's fun. And
did anybody ever not fall backwards or, like?
No. Because, like, you don't want to be that person. Yeah. And you had these little modesty sheets for the ladies. So, like, there were these little horrible blue polyester little hospital sheets. And so, like, you'd have somebody ready for that. So when the woman fell and her skirt came up, you would flip that thing and put it on her leg so you couldn't, like, see her exposed.
Kira Lee, I've always wanted to know how that worked because you see it on television.
Right.
And you're like, are people in on this? Or what exactly is it happening?
I can't speak for the TV. I feel like for, like, Benny Hinn and the TV stuff, there's a lot of, like, shenanigans going on, and like maybe they're telling them information, or like or maybe like they've got people paid, but I feel like a lot of it is, and I don't think people are doing it on purpose, but it's kind of like, you know how like fortune tellers will do, they'll pick up on tells, you know.
Sure.
And they'll say generic stuff enough. Like, oh, I'm, you know, the Lord just is telling me that you're dealing with, like, a real, like, hardship in your life. And they're like, oh, yes, my mother, like, yeah, is she dealing with, like, maybe an illness? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think people were trying to manipulate. I feel like some people in the higher ups, but I feel like the people I knew were sincere about it. And I think it was, like, just everybody got caught up in the moment, you know what I mean? And so, like, you're all on that sort of same wavelength, and I think people are just feeding into that, you know? But I don't think that anybody that I, at least, like, we went to, like, a mega church later on, and I feel like there was some definitely nonsense, but the little church I was, I feel like people were sincere.
So we're gonna take a music break.
Yeah.
And after the break, we'll talk about you going into reparative therapy.
Sure.
But first, you have a new album called Transfigure. And you'd like to play us a song called Little Arsonist to begin.
Little Arsonist. Yeah. It's just about being somebody with a lot of fire inside them.
A little arsonist with matches in his hands. Strike them up like 1, 2, 3. You better watch where you stand. The light is so long for high. I'll become your one desire. I'll burn it right down to the ground like ninja. I won't make a sound. Don't think too hard, you might just trip the wire. I learned it all from Mary Mac back when we were in school. But then one day she ran away, which was against the rules. She lit their souls on fire. She became their one desire. She burned it right down to the ground like ninja. Well, she made no sound, but she thought too hard and then she tripped the wire. Poor thing. Don't you know? Just let go. Like ninja, I won't make a sound.
Our guest is Kira Lee, new album Transfigure. All the links are available on our website, feastoffun.com.
Thank you.
It's on iTunes.
It's on iTunes. It's on Amazon. It's on Spotify. It's on CD Baby. So, and if you see me, I most likely have a physical copy. They're pay what you can, and I'll give you one.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Sure. Thank you.
So you went through gay reparative therapy as
a
youth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, how did this come about? Was it, did you come out to the church, or did they say you're gay and you need this?
Yeah, no. So I was in my right before I was maybe early 20s. I think it was right before I turned 21. So when I say youth, I mean, I was young, but I was an adult. But a friend of mine had passed away, a really good friend. She was killed in a car wreck, and I just was in a really bad place. And so I started going to see a religious counselor who was wonderful. And then when I told her, I was gay, I think I was just at a weird place. And she didn't...
Had you been out to somebody else before or no?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I'd been out for a while, but it was really hard,
At what age was this?
So this was... So I came out right before I was 18. And so this was about two and a half years later.
Did you have your first gay kiss or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I had,
Or sexually active? Or?
Yeah. I'd had boyfriends and messed around and stuff. And so, yeah. I mean, but and it's a Shreveport, so it's really hard to find other people. So,
you didn't have Grindr at the time or
no,
anything like that.
No, I didn't have any of that. I don't know. What are you talking about? So yeah, and there was just a lot of pressure from my family, and it was really hard. And I think when my friend died, I just wasn't really vulnerable. When I came out to this therapist, I just was expecting a reaction to be like, what? And she was just like, well, that's okay. And then at some point she was just like, well, you don't have to be gay. There are options. And I think part of me wanted to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so wonderful about it, but it really just kind of opened this thing of oh, I can be free from this, And so I tried to go back to church, and I tried to do counseling and all this internet kind of groups and sessions and things. And then I did actually get engaged to be married during that time to a cisgendered female friend of mine. Of course it didn't work.
Did she know?
She did, and she was also and she wasn't gay, but she was in a she just was in a very she had a very manipulative mother who I thought did some very sort of emotionally abusive things, and I think she was just trying to get away from her mother. I think she, because literally after we broke up, she was
help me.
Yeah. Well, no. she was she met another guy and they were married, and she had a kid less than a year later. So I think she just was I will marry a tree.
Did you stand on stage and say I don't like men no more.
Yeah.
I like women. Women, 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 women.
Kinda.
Remember that guy who was, he put out an album.
Yeah, I know.
And then got into a lawsuit with the church over who owned the rights to the sounds of him
going, of
course. I like women, 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 women.
Girl, yes, he did.
I'm not gay no more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, kind of, yeah. I mean, I did. I was just, I kind of, the approach I took more.
You prophesized.
Yeah. And it wasn't women. It was just more this, I've escaped this lifestyle in Jesus, and I'm purifying myself and all this kind of stuff. But,
what was reparative therapy actually entail for you?
Because
we've heard some horror stories. And
yeah.
Was it physically invasive, or was it mostly psychological?
No, it was mostly just psychological. And the way I did it, it was kind of you just would read the sort of renewing of your mind, and sort of you would just
the renewed mind is the key.
Right. And so you would
that's one of my favorite songs, the fundamental songs.
Yeah.
The renewed mind is the key
right.
to the devil.
Right.
To the, what is it? So, how does that go?
It's a miracle in me or something.
Yeah, yeah.
The renewed mind is the key to the magic that's in me.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So, and it's this thing of you just giving it over to God, and reading the scripture, and sort of living this sort of holy life. And that is supposed to transform you. And so, I mean, I just lived this ascetic life. I didn't own a television. All I did was read the Bible all the time and meditate and pray.
But you're also a performer, right? I mean,
yeah.
Were you performing at the time? Playing?
I was a great musician. But I was doing, it was just all church music. Aww. And singing a lot of Sandy Patty and Who's
Sandy Patty?
She's this operatic, like, diva singer that, like, has this incredible operatic voice, but she's done a lot of, she's had this Christian music career where she would sing all these like, huge anthems where she would hit, like, high C's. And my mom, I grew up with my mom singing them because my mom's an incredible singer.
What do you make of all these kind of evangelical moments that go viral on the internet? You know, like the beans, greens, tomatoes, potatoes, you know. And a lot of these guys, you know, you think of these successful recording artists or gospel singers would have some money, but they don't waste any time in putting out a single based on that viral hit.
No.
And then there are churches either like embrace that or they get into a fight because the churches feel like they own, like it happens all the time.
I know. Cause I think the unfortunate like downfall of that evangelical thing is that it is all about money and power and manipulating people. And those people, will do whatever they can to get your money. And I think that, they are just desperate. They know that they're like losing ground and they know that they're on their last like hoorah. Mm. And so I think they're just like, we will do whatever we can to manipulate and take and take and take and take and take.
Now so, you said you had a friend who died suddenly in youth.
Yeah. So I wrote the song called Danny's Gun and it's about my friend.
Danny's Gun.
Mm-hmm.
Should we hear it right now?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah, and we can talk about it.
Bang, bang, went Danny's gun, and then his life was done. So sad, there's no more fun, and then the pain's begun. I called on the X-Men to do the best they can. There's nothing they could do, and so
song Danny's Gun.
Sure. So I had this friend who I knew and we were super best friends and I lived in the country and like everybody had a gun and he was visiting a friend of his who's 12 who got like a hunting gun for Christmas and he wanted to show it to him and like nobody was there and he, I don't know if the gun was loaded or whatever, but he like dropped the gun and it went off and it shot through the door and it killed my friend. And it's,
this was like a close friend of yours,
it was super close friend. And like someone who I think also might've been, you know, like an LGBT person. And I think there was a deeper connection there. But whose family was also very religious. And I don't know if it was like, denial, but like his mom, that was still a very like strong like guns right advocate, you know. And it was really disturbing for me, and like it just, there was nowhere for me to like process those emotions, you know. So it was definitely a really tough time. So the song is just sort of me dealing with that and trying to process that. And and he used to say, like, we used to do like summer parties and he would we'd be like, we can't go to sleep, you know, because we want to stay up all night. And I'd look over and he had his eyes closed. And I was like, you have to wake up. He's like, no, I'm just resting my eyes. And so like one of the lines in the thing is don't go to sleep. And I'm just resting my eyes, he said, you know. So it's kind of a thing of like having somebody there even after they're gone.
And it's so disturbing that in America now, the third leading cause of death among children is from gunshot wounds.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
And it's like, well, we have to do something to change this.
I agree. Yeah.
So how did you get out of the reparative therapy? Like, how did you leave that?
I just at some point, I think I just hit like... I just had it. Like, it was not helping. Mm-hmm. And I had moved away to Houston to go to grad school. And so I think being out of that environment was good. And then I actually met a guy and we kind of sort of like hit it off. And then I just was like, I can't do this anymore. You know, I cannot fool myself. And so
I'm doing this.
Right. Yeah. Hey girl. Yeah. And so, and it was funny cause I'd be with him. I was like, but you know, like, I'm not going to be healing forever cause I'm getting out of it. And he's like, yeah, whatever, you know? And at some point I was like, hey, that's, you know, this is just who I am. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
Was the reparative therapy difficult because you're not just identify as somebody who is sexually attracted to men, who was assigned male at birth.
Right.
But you also identify as female.
Right. Which came like a lot later. And I think it was even more difficult because I think like I've always known that I was female and identified as trans when I was a kid. I was like thought of myself as a girl and I was wanted to like, you know, I would like literally sit on like when I would go to the bathroom, I would sit down, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I was so into girl clothes and like in my mind, I always like wanted to be the girl character. And I think I just got confused cause I didn't know, that there was a difference growing up and, you know,
do you think maybe, your parents maybe went from like a regular Southern Baptist kind of church into one that's more evangelical as a way to kind of control you as a kid growing up?
You know, that is an interesting question. I don't know, but it wouldn't, surprise me. Cause I know that like both my brother and I have
I've heard that from other people that like my parents used to not be religious, then all of a sudden they got totally religious, and it's just like a lot of the times they do because they have this little queer kid, and they're like, I don't know what to do,
you know. But I could definitely see that, and because it's definitely something that they have, like, you know, used against me, unfortunately, and it's something that it's been just hard for them to
shake.
What's
your relationship like with them now, your parents?
It's okay. It's a little, I mean, like after I came out as trans, there was a long period where I just didn't hear anything from them. And that was hard. And recently they've sort of reached out.
Was
again.
It easier for your parents to hear that you were gay versus hearing that you were trans?
Yeah. And I don't know why. I think for some reason I thought it would be easier because I feel like in the word heteronormative thinking, it would make more sense because it made more sense to me.
Sure.
Because you're straight now, right?
Yeah. I know it's weird. I'm like, I'm a straight white Christian girl, like from the South. I'm like my own worst enemy. Like what happened? You know,
First of all, you need to dye the hair blonde. And it needs to be bigger.
I know, honey. Get up here. It's weird. And like, because I was like, oh my God, if I just had been assigned a female body at birth, mm-hmm. I'd probably been some pageant queen. You
You'd
know
be
what
the
mean?
Worst mm-hmm. person in the world.
The worst bitch on the planet. So yeah, I thought it would click more, but for some reason, I don't know. Like, you know, my mom, she reached out to me today and she's like, you know, I owe you a huge apology and I'm sorry that we've been distant. It's just, this is hard for us, but you know, I do.
That's very sweet of her to realize that you know,
it was kind of prompted. So
I'm coming on the podcast, so I better, no. You know,
well,
call
so
her
my, my former partner and I, like, you know, so after I came out as trans, we decided, cause he identifies as a gay man, you know, so we decided not to be together romantically, but we still live together. We're raising these cats and we love and support each other. And he's been really great with my parents. And so he like, I saw he emailed, he was like, I emailed your parents. And he was basically like, hey, so, how you guys doing? What the fuck? I mean, like in a really nice way, but he was like, you're really hurting your child. You know, like you have not talked to her and like, she's just, you need to reach out. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, so
well,
I was
we're
like,
kind of lucky, you know, we get to have a community. We have some resources.
For
we have
sure.
our friends and a lot of tools. And we've had our whole lives to get used to who we are.
Right.
And they don't always have all that that time or luxury or resources.
Totally. And I, and I and I told her, I said, thank you for the apology. That really means a lot. And I said, but I want you to know that you have the right to feel however you feel and to process however you need to. I'm not hurt by that, you know? And I said, you know, just know that I'm 100% happy, you know.
And then she went to this, like, you know, Mexican border wall Trump tirade.
right. Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, they are Republicans. I know they voted for Trump, and it's like,
so did Caitlyn Jenner.
That bitch. I'm like, can she just not remember? And that was the thing. I was having lunch with my friend today, and I was like, and I'm probably the only trans person that my parents even know exists is Caitlyn Jenner. And that sucks. You know?
Well, in some ways, does Caitlyn's, you know, sort of political and in some ways moral ambiguity make it easier, more palatable, you know, to your parents?
That's what I was wondering. And I don't know. But then at the same time, I don't want them to be like, well, she believes this, so why don't you? Like, she's okay with Trump or whatever. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Caitlyn Jenner ran over somebody and got away with it, you know?
Right. So I don't know. It's really strange. But yeah, I mean,
what advice to the people who are listening to this, who, and I know a lot of people out there,
yeah,
they never heal that divide with their parents.
Sure.
And certainly you've had, I can't think of anybody on the show that's been on this program lately that has a bigger divide, a very bigger chasm than you, sure, and your parents. In this day and age, we're not just divided because of our gender and sexual identity,
right,
but because of this monster that's in the White House.
Exactly.
And it's so scary. It's terrifying, you, yeah, know, like, you know, he's furious that people did not applaud for him at the State of the Union address, and he's saying it treason, calling it treason.
I know.
And so his supporters are basically looking at us.
Right.
The rest of the,
like, we're unpatriotic.
Right.
Not so that we're patriotic, that we are treasonous. We, right, are deserve to that be killed for not supporting,
yeah,
the president.
Right. For not applauding his every moment. Right. It's
and,
really sad.
And it's really, you know, here in, yeah, Illinois, they're putting forward an actual Nazi for the Republican ticket. And
I know. It's sad. It's really sad and scary.
And so I can imagine for families where, you know, there's not, right, just a perspective divide,
right,
on these things, but also a political one.
Right.
It can be profoundly hard. What can you tell people who are listening to this show right now on how to manage that?
I think, first of all, I think you have to be 100% honest with your friends and family. I think before that, I think make sure that you're safe and that, like, you don't ever want to jeopardize your safety. So that first. So make sure that you're safe. Secondly, you have to be 100% honest with them about who you are, because I think visibility is important. I think you have to set boundaries, though, and be like, you know, like, that you will not allow them to cross. And I think you just have to make it personal. You have to be like, this is what happens to me, you know, when this so-and-so is in power, or, like, this is enacted. You know, I think if they can connect it to a person, better. And I think try to just be the bigger, compassionate one as much as possible. But definitely, like, set boundaries for yourself.
So, like,
yourself.
The song Dream Girls, Patience,
yes,
Little Sister.
Yes. And Effie, we all got pain. That is, I use that one all the time.
Mm. You know, anytime I'm feeling down, it's like I want to lift myself up, I listen to Dream Girls.
Mm-hmm.
There's something really just extraordinary. You know, a lot of the...
She makes it, you know?
That music was written by a gay man.
It was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who wrote Sideshow, too.
Oh, really?
Oh, I don't know that one. I should check it out.
It's not as good, but it's, yeah.
I'm, like, Googling it. I'm, like, Dreamgirls writer.
Henry something. Henry Krieger, I think. Is it? Is that right?
Bill Russell?
Bill Krieger. No, that's Bill. That's the film's
director.
Yeah. Henry Krieger,
yeah.
Yeah. I guess he had a close relationship with Jennifer Holliday.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
And so that's why he basically said this musical has to happen with her.
Yeah. And thank God it did. Oh, my God.
Now, before we started taping, we were talking a little bit about fitness.
Sure.
The intersectionality of bodybuilders and transgender people.
Sure. Yeah.
How does, you know, I mean, you know, for a lot of people who identify as gay men, we have a very complicated relationship with our bodies.
Right.
Which I don't know if that experience is shared by gay women.
Sure.
Cisgendered gay women, and certainly, like, you know, in a lot of ways we can relate much more to the complicated feelings that transgender people have about their bodies.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit about, like, how sort of coming forward as a trans person and changing your appearance has made you think different about your body?
Sure. I think definitely once identified as trans, and now that I'm on hormones, and seeing the that my physical body matches with what I feel internally,
sure,
that has made a huge difference. Where before I just felt like invisible all the time, and when I would look in the mirror, it really was like a stranger was looking at me. So feeling like seen and visible has been really incredible. And just the fact that, like, I have the right amount of hormones, like, that estrogen is the hormone that I need, and testosterone was, like, poisoning my body, you know, and having that balance.
We don't want to get rid of all the testosterone.
No, yeah. No, but, like, the way I understand it is, like, sort of, like, if you're a transgender person, you have, basically, I have, like, a female brain.
It feels right.
Right. And that, like, my like, receptor for testosterone is, like, was being bombarded. You know, it's, like, too much of the hormone. So it's, like, it balances it. And so now, yeah, it feels right. And then it does affect my body in a way where I like what I'm seeing. And then, like, and I think with surgeries, I think that's different for everybody. And I certainly, for me, something like a gender confirmation surgery, I would put in a different category as opposed to, like facial feminization or even like breast enlargement. And for my own personal things, like, I just want to be a healthy person. And yes, everybody wants their body to look a certain way, but I am trying not to, keep grounded and not get caught up in, like, oh, but I need, like, this surgery and that surgery and that surgery, you know, because I don't want
it,
to base
it turns your identity into a shopping list.
Right. And I don't want to base it on what I look like on the outside. And so I'm really trying to own, like, this is the face I have. This is the body I have. Sure, I can do this and that and the other, but and if I do surgeries, sure, but I don't want that to take over and become my life, you know, or define myself on that.
Yeah, because I notice for a lot of LGBT people, they associate athleticism with masculinity.
Sure, yeah.
And to me, it's like I associate athleticism with, you know, health and wellness.
Right,
and
for
so
sure.
To me, it's very distressing when I hear on, you know, friends who are trans or
right
or nonconforming in one way or another being right. Like, you know, I reject the binary, so I'm going to smoke and drink and do all the drugs. You know?
Sure.
And I'm just like, don't, no, honey. It's like,
no,
you know, take
right.
care of yourself. Well, like, exercise, eat your vegetables,
yeah.
Sleep well, you know?
And I don't know. I have a lot of wonderful trans friends, and I think we're incredibly supportive of one another and helping each other, you know, talk about these issues and, like, you know, and if we need each other, are like, here's resources. Or a friend of mine loves these sort of like these like sort of trans like comics and little blurbs, and like she'll send, you know, and so it's like, I don't know, I found that really, really helpful just to have other people that we can all sort of journey together.
Have you seen these t-shirts that says "Real Women Squat"?
Well, no, I haven't.
So a lot of it's about for female women who like to lift weights.
It's
for women, regardless of their the trans or cis or whatever.
The toilet, what?
Squat over the toilet.
Right. I was like, huh?
It's like lifting weights can be really difficult. For, and, you
sure.
know, my mother, like, she grew up in where ladies don't sweat, ladies
right.
don't exercise, and so for a lot of people who are sort of you know, reclaiming their femininity,
sure.
It's very distressing to feel like they don't know what to do in terms of, like, exercising or working
right.
out.
Well, and I don't know, like, I feel like, you know, like, there's so many resources, whether it's like personal trainer or you go online, you know, to like sculpt things in certain ways. And I don't know, I feel like I love athletic women. I love their bodies. And I'm so glad to see somebody like a Wonder Woman that finally has like muscles, because, you know, I grew up in the theater with female dancers, and they all had, like, you know, muscles and arms, because if you're going to work out, your body is going to start to look a certain way. I mean, athletic women, that's why I hate watching, like, shows with female heroes and they're like little, you know, skin and bones, because that's not what they look like.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing that bothers me a lot about like superhero films
right.
and television shows, is that, you know, some of these people are like schlups.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, you're expecting me to imagine this woman is right. lifting a car over her head and she, you
know, it's like 2 pounds.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I'd rather watch like, you know, an Olympian woman who is like ripped, you know, that inspires me, you know.
That's what I really liked about the casting of for Wonder Woman.
Yes, me too. That like made me cry, like watching those Amazons at the beginning, and all that just was one of the most beautiful things I've seen in life.
You're like, I want to live there.
I do. I was like, sign me up, honey. I'm there.
That seems like life would be really hard without any dicks on that island.
I don't know. Not.
She said in the movie, she's like, you know, you don't need a penis to have an orgasm. And it's like, but of course, what does she do? The first thing she gets on her hands?
I know. It's like, shablam. Yeah. I don't know. My sex time is a lot.
You're going to take your clothes off. Let me take a look at that dick. All right. I'm going to go with him, just to let you know.
I'm going to go fight evil people.
Nazis?
And get some dick.
I don't know what that is, but, you know, wherever Chris Pine's headed, I'm
right. Actually, it was World War One. They said it in World War One, so it was
German.
It was the Axis or whatever.
So you have a song called Tomboy.
Tomboy. So I was very fortunate to have my wonderful lesbian aunt grow as I was growing up, and so this is kind of like for her, and just I don't know, and just having that similarity, and then, you know, dealing with gender non-binary and just celebrating that.
Hey Tomboy, won't you play with me? Come on over and see what I see. This world so rough isn't good enough. Why don't just climb up this tree? 'Cause you and I, we're one of a kind. We go to extremes and we blow all their minds. Here comes that drummer, let's dance to his beat. Make our own tune, but you better watch your feet, 'cause they're catching on. They're catching on, they're catching on, and they'll try to separate us for good. We can play house, and we can play dress up. You can bring home the bacon, and I'll make all the beds up. We'll spread that message sent down from above, that they will know us, sister, by our love. 'Cause you and I, we are one of a kind. We go to extremes and we blow all their minds. Here comes that drama, let's dance to we better watch our feet, 'cause they're catching on, they're catching on, they're catching on, and they'll try to separate us.
Yes.
Yay, thank you.
Kira Lee. The album is Transfigure. It's available where music is sold.
Pretty much.
Get it through our links on our website, feastoffun.com.
Woohoo.
You know, Farron, she's called the Johnny Cash of singer-songwriters, lesbian singer-songwriter.
Check that out.
Really great musician.
School. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'd like it
She's
then.
OG.
Mm-hmm. No, I like old school country.
Girl on a Road is a fantastic song.
Oh, I'm there.
And
I'm
she's there. Also somebody who's very trans inclusive.
Oh, I'm there. Bam.
Because you heard about the whole Michigan Women's Music Festival and stuff like that.
No, know. Would they not let
you don't remember? You're a musician?
Girl, I am in a bubble.
You don't know about that one?
No,
the,
y'all
that
are
was
educating.
The controversy.
They
didn't. Of
they
the
weren't
millennium.
Letting in trans women. Is
that's right.
They were letting trans women in, but you weren't.
You keep it shut. Keep your lips shut
you
about
to
it.
Keep your lips shut about it. You couldn't be like, "Here's my penis," kind of thing.
Or like, "I'm a trans woman, and this is my song about it," or whatever.
So in the second season of Transparent, it's kind of depicted that whole.
Oh, see, I need to catch up.
Yeah. But you know, it resolved itself because the organizers of the festival said, we don't want to do this anymore.
Oh, there you go.
And now the rest of the world is like, you know, trans women are women.
We're women. The end.
And that's the end of it. And then now you're starting to see, you know, Russian bots and divisive kind of content on the internet being like, you know, the women's movement is getting rid of the pink hats because pink hats are transphobic. And I'm like, I don't think so.
Wear whatever you want. Just show up. That's what I say. Let's just show up and support and love each other. Just be inclusive, intersectional, and show up.
Now, you watched the Super Bowl.
No.
Neither did I, but I did watch the halftime show.
Timberlake, right? Mr. Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Which I was like, why didn't Janet run up and tear his clothes off? That would have been great.
She was not invited.
I would like to, you know, I'm a big fan of dye sublimation, which is the, you know, having a giant photo on a shirt.
Oh, sure.
Which you can do so many crazy, wild, fun things with it. But the shirt that he had kind of looked like a Bob Ross painting from PBS, you know?
Yikes.
And so people were just saying that this is it was kind of like a funeral for Justin Timberlake's career.
Eek.
And so, anyways, the news are coming out now, and we did a podcast a while back about how big dicks inspire people.
Okay.
That straight men are actually really want to know other men's dick size on a subconscious level. So when they're in the locker room, they look at each other's dicks, not for sexual reasons.
Oh, okay.
Or, you know, I would say it's a sexual reason, but not in the way that you and I think about sexuality.
Right. It's like to make sure that they're like a better above, or at least keeping up, or
they're
whatever.
Saying that actually, like, if you have, like, because it was in a study called Jockocracy, Queering Masculinity in Sport. And if you go to our website, if you search Cockocracy, you can see our discussion that we had about it. And the author of the actual article listened to it and wrote to me and said that it was, that we totally got it. It was the best conversation or representation of his work that we had. And the idea is they say that, like, teams do really well when they're, like, the captain or the quarterback or somebody that's like really important on the team has a large penis.
Not necessarily is perceived to have a large penis.
Well, compared to the other people in the
game. Is it just in sports though? Is that
You know, we don't know. I mean, where else do you see dicks? You
maybe
know,
the maybe they just have confidence. I don't know.
Well, part of it is
you see it in the like the locker room. You see it in the shower. You see it that kind of thing.
Virility.
And so what they discover is you know is what people are talking about is that the quarterback for the Eagles like somebody was asking like who's got the biggest dick, and they mentioned him, and they said that he has the biggest dick.
Okay, what's his name?
Foles. His last name's Foles.
Okay,
and so Foles has the biggest dick, and they just won the Super Bowl because his penis inspired the rest of his teammates to pull together and achieve this.
I see that picture. Is his hands like out like this? Is that what he's measuring?
He's saying how big his
dick
is.
That's how big it is.
Foles. He looks like he might have a big dick, huh?
Well, he's tall. He's very tall. He has big hands. So
and that's what they say is like it usually goes by like your height,
right?
Like
I thought like hand and feet size. I thought had the big.
That's they're not really sure about that, but they say the only real indicator of like how big a penis is by height.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So I've been with tall guys who are
modest.
What we call them? I think that in Native American culture, they call them like Buffalo Man.
What's that?
The
mean?
Otter. Like in terms of penis sizes, they assign an animal to you.
Oh.
And so the beaver woman is.
I forgot about this thing. This is.
The shape of your vagina and the shape of your penis in Native American cultures are assigned to different animals. And so Native Americans understand that, you know, in terms of like pleasure,
okay,
somebody with a really big dick and a tiny pussy are not going to get along too well.
That, well, I mean, you know, just like physics. That's a ouch, you know.
And so they go like, instead of being like small, big, you know, or short, fat, or wide,
animal totem.
They're that's like, you're a buffalo man.
I like that.
This sounds like hippie stuff from the 60s.
Squirrel man,
like,
or something.
Right. Stuff. But I do remember reading something about this before. I was like, this is weird.
You do this podcast for long enough, you're going to run into shit like this. And, you know, I like it. So I'm a big believer in diversity. You know, the only thing that's ever bothered me is, like, I've been with guys who had small penises.
Sure.
And when I discovered that, they looked at me like they were apologizing.
Well, you should have gasped.
And like thrown up, get out! Yeah.
And to me, I'm like, listen, you can't do anything about your penis size.
No, who cares?
Don't apologize.
Just
what it
never
is.
Apologize just do it. For your dick. You
right?
Know?
No. It's don't like, do it.
Yeah.
Own that shit.
How compassionate are you?
Right.
How do you go to see a dentist regularly? Do you go to the gym?
Right.
Are you shower?
A giving
you,
lover? Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a kind
things that
person?
Are more important.
Right.
It's a measure of a man's wealth or being is their heart.
Right.
And Trump is a poor man.
Oh my God. He is disgusting.
A poverty. So this week is the Berlin Wall. Has been down exactly as long as it was up.
Wow. Thanks,
over,
David Hasselhoff.
10,316 days. Why did you say David Hasselhoff brought down the Berlin Wall?
Yeah, because remember he sang at the he's huge
down.
In Germany. He sang when it came down. And I think he like feels like he's a huge part
he
of that.
He has many albums out in Germany. When I lived in Germany, I almost bought one of his albums just for like, you know, for the irony of it.
Right.
But since it was like the early 90s, irony wasn't really invented. So I didn't
buy
it.
Yeah.
So
I should cover one of his songs.
And you remember that, Jesus Jones?
Of course I do.
Right here, right now.
Yeah.
Watching the world wake up from history.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And people just had a sense of optimism.
Right.
Like, this is what my generation.
And Van Halen.
You and I's generation was defined by the coming down of the Berlin Wall.
Agreed.
And it was sort of the wrapping up of the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
The Cold War era. And we were just like, we had this can-do spirit. And
totally.
George W. Bush came
fucked
into power.
It up.
And, you know, you can't blame George W. Bush for the events of September 11th, but how he handled that.
Yeah, terrible. Terrible.
I brought in a new age of darkness that we're still reeling from.
Right. Obama tried. Did he ever try? But they would not let him have a break.
Yeah.
Oof.
And so in a lot of ways, it's like, you know, we had an amazing future that I wish we were living in, but somehow we got transported into this other reality that we're in right now.
We let our guard down and...
I know. That's the thing, is the letting the guard down.
I didn't let my guard down. I was fighting every inch of the way.
No, but I definitely probably got a little too comfortable, complacent, and but now I'm out and slashing people's tires.
Metaphorically speaking. Right.
With love.
But I think, you know, we live in unprecedented times because not all of us agree on what equality or progress is.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a reason why in the wisdom of the people who sort of developed the LGBT rights movement.
Yes. Yeah.
They chose a rainbow as it's on my wristband here. Because it's a symbol that we're not all going to see things the same, but we're all connected
together. Yes. And I think anywhere where we can just find that unity and be like, you know, we don't agree on everything, but we all agree that we're all human beings and we deserve rights and compassion and let's band together. You know, that is what I am always trying to push for.
So I don't know what to make about this, but there's a video forensic anthropologists. There are people who dig up things from the past and try to put it together just like a police detective would.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So using the same techniques to see what people in the past used to look like.
Okay.
And people are fascinated, of course, with Egypt.
Right.
And Egyptian royalty.
Sure.
And there's a lot of African Americans who swear they are descendants of Egyptian princes, kings, and queens.
Right.
And one of the most celebrated Egyptian figures is Nefertiti.
Yes.
And mostly because of that beautiful sculpture that's intact.
Right. That's gorgeous.
And she was the mother of King Tut.
Correct.
So everybody remembers him, of course.
And the reason, you know, why we know King Tutankhamun.
Is because they discovered his tomb.
He wasn't a great king. He wasn't one of the wealthiest. He was not one of the grandest kings.
No. Right.
But his, because he wasn't so big and spectacular, his tomb went relatively unnoticed and undisturbed. And in the modern world, his tomb is the only tomb that we have mm-hmm. that is as pristine as it could be because it wasn't touched by thieves.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And they also say that he, you know, he didn't reign for very long, and he also had like some severe medical problems too.
Sure.
So they actually did like a reconstruction of what he probably looked like too, and he was had a little you know, he had some malformations
sure.
going on. And they actually say the gold mask now that they found with him was probably created for his mother Nefertiti.
Okay.
And so but then it was on his sarcophagus
right.
or his
they
tomb.
Recycled shit.
They recycled stuff. They do it all the time.
Yeah.
But you know, there's some controversy because like on Good Morning America they unveiled Nefertiti,
sure.
The reproduction that they made, sculpture. You know, a sculpture that they made based on forensic science.
On right. the bones.
On the bones. And so they can look at the skin depth and stuff like that. And it looks pretty much like the statue that we've seen before, but a lot of people are complaining that she's too light, that she would have been much darker.
Sure.
And she does kind of, she does look rather light in that video, but also too, that's a video that's been taken from somebody's TV.
Sure.
So we don't know that's what their true. Contrast or brightness is at. But if you do look at a photo of her, she does look a little bit darker and a little closer to the color that you would see okay. on the statue. But some people are saying the statue, the pigment, would have originally been much darker to begin
sure.
with.
Sure. Well, I mean, and like we, mm-hmm. we remember when the Sistine Chapel, when they did the retouching, and like all, it was like, whoa, it was like completely oh, yeah. different thing.
Because it was like so dark looking from all that incense.
Right.
And then we're like, oh my God, look at these bright, beautiful, vibrant
right.
colors
yeah.
that Michelangelo
so
used.
We know that like artwork can really change mm-hmm. and be affected by mm-hmm. the environment. So yeah, I mean,
I would argue that definitely Nefertiti's sculpture, the colors in it
sure.
seem very muted.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
and
okay.
certainly in the past, bright colors would be associated with you know aristocracy.
Mm-hmm. Sure, right.
And
right.
As a person who understands how pigments fade through time,
sure.
it's very hard to sustain pigments. Especially over the course of millennia.
Right.
So you have to look at every sculpture as if it was washed
right.
by the hands of time.
Right.
But also, too,
and
is like when you do look
stuff.
At like the colors that they used in Egypt, and
right.
even those Greek statues that are like marble now that you'd see,
sure.
those at one point in time would have been painted.
Right.
And the color scheme that they use, like, it's not the color scheme we would use now. It's like a lot of the stuff was like very bright and over-the-top kind
right.
of colors.
Well, and we don't know if like the colors they were using, if they were trying to do a realistic depiction mm-hmm. or if they're doing something more godlike. I don't know, you know.
I do have a point to agree with the guy who made the video, and one is that we may not be realistically describing the skin color.
Okay.
But definitely, you know, her having blue eyes in that forensic sculpture seems to be questionable.
Well, she doesn't
sure.
have blue eyes.
Okay.
I see in this
Did
photo
she?
Here, she seems
oh,
to have
okay.
lighter eyes in the photo. So, like, you know, but it's
they're
it's,
not brown
it's,
eyes.
They're brown.
They
brown.
Are.
Yeah,
okay.
Of course, they're brown. They're
oh,
brown.
Eyes. When I saw
but
it, I thought they were blue.
They're the kind of brown eyes that if you like, if you take a picture of an African American person, you shine a really bright light into their eyes.
Okay.
It's that color brown.
Sure.
Okay. So it's not like it's not a dark. Like it doesn't look dark.
Just to let you know, like you know, people with dark eyes. Mm-hmm. Who are celebrities who have photos taken of them usually get the irises of their eyes lightened.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Just because it creates a more striking photo.
Oh, okay.
It makes
you,
the eyes pop out.
You can also
out.
Achieve some of that effect with light.
Correct.
Sure.
As long as you're shining light at the mm-hmm. iris,
okay.
it can bounce off. But
mm-hmm.
but a lot of photos are retouched. Most photos are retouched.
Right. Sure.
And you want to have tonal depth.
Right.
You want to have a wide variety of it. And sometimes that means lightening and darkening parts of the face in order to give more shape.
Sure.
And of course, that's a very photography, as we remember with the is it a blue and white dress
yes,
or a black and gold dress?
Right.
Can be very controversial.
Sure.
Because you're questioning people's reality.
I still don't get
sure.
that blue and that gold dress thing. I still don't understand why people ever saw it as gold.
So, because the exact same pigments can, depending on the context, can be interpreted by the eye
sure.
as different colors.
Right.
So what something looks, it's, you know, like when light is shining on something that's white, it can
sure.
change the mm-hmm. color. And that color, that photo that we saw was overexposed.
Sure.
So it basically brought into question what we were looking at.
Right.
And so when I saw, when that phenomena went down as a photographer, And as a gay man and as a human being, I just basically said, you know, sky's the limit.
Right.
If you can make yourself look like something in a photo, people will accept it at face value.
Sure. Right.
So why not?
Right.
Let's retouch.
Yeah. Women. And I never had the privilege of meeting Nefertiti, so I don't know her.
Well, I don't have anything to prepare. Can we just clone her?
Maybe.
That's would be a very difficult thing, but that is a possibility in the future, is that we're going to have the DNA of Hitler.
Sure. Oh, God. You know,
and some asshole somewhere is going to be like, here's Hitler's baby.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah, but would Hitler grow up to be Hitler, or was it the massive amounts of methamphetamines that he took that warped his brain?
Right. Or the environment, who knows?
It would
nurture
be
versus nature, right?
Impossible.
Chemical imbalances.
Anybody with the same DNA to grow up to be that same person. So that's a good thing.
Right.
You know,
although they say sometimes like people that are twins that grow up in different situations have a lot in common.
They have a lot in common, and maybe, you know, common in terms of temperament, but not in political views.
And at the same time, you'll have a gay twin or a straight twin or a transgen and a twin and a cis twin, you know, like, so. I never know.
You know, Akira Lee. I would have to call you Akira Lee.
I know. Akira.
Akira Lee. You know, maybe this is a blessing from the universe.
It's sure. Like,
you know, being trans.
Yeah. I think so.
Being now a straight person.
Yeah.
Who's experienced what it's like to be a gay man.
Right. No, I definitely think it
gives you compassion. It gives you
completely
opens doors.
Yeah.
So in some ways, you're luckier than your parents are.
I try to remember that like, you know, I've definitely had experiences that other people haven't, you know, and so like, and it has made me a more empathetic person. So, you know,
how can we inspire? Because I think for a lot of LGBT people, we're in a lot of pain.
We are in a lot of pain. There's
and
a lot of pain.
When you're in pain, it's really hard to have empathy for other people.
Sure.
And sometimes empathy can be a really rich gift that you can give to yourself.
Yeah.
How can we inspire that for other people?
You know, I think, I hate to get cliched, but you know, it's like the RuPaul thing. It's like, if you can't love yourself, how are you gonna love somebody else? I think you just have to like
self-care
on like acceptance, love, forgiveness, having empathy with yourself and really nurturing who you are. And I, as an artist, I just think if everyone can find some kind of creative outlet, I think it helps a lot. Even if it's not your career, if it's just something like you draw or you paint or you write music or you know, whatever, I think it's helpful.
You know, one of the happiest memories of this past year was singing Christmas carols.
Yes, that was great.
At Manny's Christmas party.
That was a blessing. It was beautiful.
Because you were on the bass.
So the bass, which Manny I never guitar, get to play. Right? He played guitar and also, no, it was
his boyfriend.
What's
was
his name?
Cameron was on the Cameron. Keyboard.
Yeah, it was on the keyboard.
I played the triangle, but you guys wouldn't let me.
What was my decision? A lot of great singers. It was fun.
Yeah.
Well, because it's different
live band
than
Christmas carols.
Then it was karaoke. Yeah. You know, I think with karaoke is that the person who's usually singing isn't very concerned of how well they sing.
Right.
And so they're kind of imposing a 4-minute song on a group of people. And this was a very different experience. This was a group of people who are very excellent musicians.
Right.
Sort of collaborating together, harmonizing right. with each other.
Yes.
And performing for each
sharing
other in
their
a very
gift.
Organic way.
Agreed. Mm. And I think it's beautiful. Beautiful.
And that to me is like, music is something that's meant to be shared.
I think so. And I think music, again, is a universal language, and I think that's another great way to connect with people.
And honey, you have a hell of a tongue.
Girl, I do.
So let's finish up here with some of your music.
Okay.
What song would you like to leave us with?
So this is Alex. And it's just sort of, you know, again, of like two people trying to be something they're not. So it's that thing again of just being who you are and trusting that.
Well, before we say goodbye, I'd like to remind the audience that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes the show happen. We wouldn't be able to talk to fantastic artists like Kira if it weren't for you guys.
You can listen to past podcasts with Kira.
Yeah.
That was shot 5 years ago, almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
Through our archives, VistaFun.com/plus, you get exclusive behind the scenes footage and all sorts of goodies available only to premium members. This is not available to the rest of the public. You can tap in and flow through our, you know, decades now, in plural, of amazing Feast of Fun shows. And it's only available to you as a premium subscriber. So if you treat yourself, you're not going to cheat yourself.
That's right.
Love it. Do it.
Thank you, Kira.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Alex, my dear boy, we've had this conversation, but I keep changing the ending. Alex, I've been thinking a lot. We're trying to be this thing that we're not. What's it for? What's it for? 'Cause I can't. On the shelf for some